Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to Android Faithful, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the world of Android. I am Jason Howell.
I am Ron Richards, and I cannot match that energy there, Jason.
And I'm Winto Adao, and I also cannot match it, but I'm stunned.
Yeah. I don't think there's ever any doubt whether I can match that energy. I'm Michelle Armand.
Oh, come on. I expected you to be busting out right now, Michelle. That's what I expected. Welcome to Android Faithful, the land of the androids.
What a time to be alive in the land of the androids, isn't
it? Oh, yeah.
We're in that lovely doldrum spring period.
Where
I think it's a little doldrum. There's nothing.
A little doldrumsy right now.
I know. This is where Michelle corrects me and says that he's got a lot of work working on Android 15 stuff. But
this is the time of year to do spring cleaning. This is the time I spring clean my Android 15 backlog.
Yeah,
and
there it is.
See why later the show.
You've just been creating a list. I'll get to it someday. And now is someday.
Yes, I literally do have a list of Android 15 content that I want to write.
All right,
I'm sure you do.
Now's the perfect time to launch a new podcast if somebody was going to do it.
Yeah, but I don't know why anyone would do that. So
that's not true.
Yes, Ron is alluding to the fact that I launched a new podcast. Oh, actually, a new podcast and a new kind of redesign for the YouTube channel. But you mentioned the podcast. Texploder is the name of it. Episode 0 is out there. Do a search in your podcatcher of choice. Texploder is also the name of the YouTube channel. Basically, it was Yellow Gold Studios before. Now it is Texploder. It's kind of, at a certain point, I was like, you know, Yellow Gold Studios doesn't really say anything about what I'm doing. Like, it's close to my heart, but it doesn't really have
it's
any
good company
sort of clue.
Name. It's a good production company name.
Yeah, like it's like the network, but it doesn't have to be, you know, the identity of what I'm doing. And Texploder, as you know, Ron, because I think I hit you up on WhatsApp, like literally within minutes after it came to me on a walk with my dogs. And it came to me and I was like, I love this name. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but holy cow, I'm setting it aside. You know, no one had the domain. No one had the YouTube channel name. And I was amazed at that. And I finally found a use for it. So it's all about the human side of tech. And I've got some really cool plans coming up. And episode 1 of the podcast, May 3rd, with a guest, the first guest being someone we are all very familiar with. I'm sure some people listening would be able to guess, but I'm not going to confirm or deny until it happens. So that's it. Texploder podcast and Texploder.
Well, congratulations. It was a great launch.
Thank you. Yes.
I encourage everybody to go to the YouTube channel or socials and check out the video. Awesome launch video. I'm sure I'm speaking for Michelle and Wynn and myself when we were all honored to be a part of it for one word. But yeah, definitely everybody, if you're listening, go find it, go check it out and go subscribe to Texploder because it's going to be the best new tech podcast of the year.
Thanks, so. Man. I think it's going to be fun. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. What about this show, though, Ron?
This is the best new show of last year, but it's still the best Android show of this year. And just a quick reminder to everybody, head over to patreon.com/androidfaithful. That's how you can support the show. We've got a lot of cool stuff planned and in the hopper and cooking, and it's all because of everyone who supported us on Patreon. And so if you are listening and you're not supporting us on Patreon, please go to patreon.com/androidfaithful. Check out the different membership levels. See what options there are there for you. You can get an ad-free version of the podcast. You can get a t-shirt. You get stickers. You get access to our Discord. You get to vote on a news story for us to talk about, which we're going to do later on in the show. So please, again, this is like a PBS member drive time period or whatever. Go to patreon.com/androidfaithful. we would love to see that community grow. So if you're on the fence about it, please pull the trigger. We would appreciate it. So
yeah, it helps us do what we do.
Indeed.
Now more than ever.
All right. Well, why don't we get started?
All right. Let's do it. It's time for the news. And Wynn, you've got the top story this week. What you got?
Yeah. And it's a big one. And of course, it's a story about AI, or at least AI is at the heart of it. So huge news out of Google today in that they are they're doing very deep and very wide restructuring. And it looks like Android is going to be part and at the heart of that big restructuring for AI. So Google has announced some very significant restructuring to accelerate the integration of artificial intelligence across multiple platforms and products and services. And so basically the Android and hardware teams are combining into a single Voltron, you know, that kind of Gundam type figurine. And basically the idea is that this new team, which will be called Platforms and Devices, will be led by Rick Osterloh, friend of the show, Hiroshi Lockheimer, will continue to be at Google, but working on other products. And the idea is that, you know, as Ron likes to say, Google is infamous for right hand, not talking to left hand. And sometimes at big companies, that could be because right hand's got like an iron glove with like one little hole for left hand to talk to. So the idea is that they can actually, you know, maybe put the two hands in the same glove so that they can have an easier time talking. This metaphor has just gone out of control.
That's got to be a big glove.
Big glove.
Both the hands fit in there. Very warm.
But the idea is basically to, in order for them to really integrate AI successfully, efficiently, they need to have people in the same place. They need to have total control over, you know, stacks, the whole full stack, or, you know, the verticals, if you're more businessy speaky. And so they're going to do this across many different teams, like their AI teams, like DeepMind, DeepMind and the other AI team are combined together. And so now, yeah, Pixel, Android, Chrome, Chrome OS are all going to be under a singular team, Platforms and Devices, led by Rick Osterloh, friend of the show. Samir Samat is going to become, quote, president of the Android ecosystem.
Also friend of the show. I mean, friend of the extension of the show.
Yeah. Friend of the extension of the show.
A couple of times. Mm-hmm.
I meant to say yes. Also friend of the show, Samir Samat. I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this a good thing? Is this a long time coming? Is there anything you're nervous about?
All of the above? I mean, I think yes.
Yes across the board, right?
Yes across the board, yeah.
All of those things you just said, just because...
The two biggest headlines, the two biggest, at least, things for me from it were just the general idea of restructuring, three things. The general restructuring under the AI banner, which is like, you know, drinking game to the max, right? Like, we're just in on the AI Kool-Aid. But then secondarily, having it all be under Rick Osterloh, who we are very fond of, think is great, all stuff like that, from a device and hardware standpoint, not necessarily from a software, you know, not to say that he's not, you know, isn't a competent executive manager, like that's clearly what he's doing, but coming mainly from a hardware kind of, you know, kind of background. But then the third thing, which is like, by Hiroshi?
I know. Like, that's kind of the bittersweet part for me. Like, wait a minute, Hiroshi, where are you going?
Yeah, like all we've seen is Hiroshi will be seeking new projects. And like, and I read the Verge article coverage of it where I guess whoever wrote it for the Verge was on a Google Meet call with Rick and Hiroshi from Hiroshi's office, like, you know, showing off that like they've been asking Sundar to do this for 2 years now and like all this sort of stuff. So like if Hiroshi's mentally checked out and ready to move on, I wish him the best of luck. But you know, we got a little soft spot in our heart for Hiroshi. You know,
we do.
Yeah. I think as you mentioned,
Sundar's blog post did explicitly say that he's going to be, I think, overseeing the transition.
Yeah,
like he's not just like not involved anymore.
And then seeking new projects, which is basically go to do other stuff. Yeah. So
I think he's actually what was it? Corporate's he's kind of taking charge of like the Japanese division as well. Or spokesperson for the Japanese division.
Japanese AI.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. I think it was interesting to note in the Verge article that I don't know if you have your tinfoil hat, some people were speculating. If you're speculating that there's some kind of power struggle or something, Verge was like very quick to say that both Rick and Hiroshi were like, no, that's not what's going on. It's not like, you know, some kind of Game of Thrones thing. It's just part of the restructuring. And I think something that is interesting that was my concern is that, you know, obviously this makes a lot of sense because Pixel has always been like the test bed and obviously the kind of like exemplar of, you know, Google AI features, but that Android is still an ecosystem with tons of OEMs. And so there's like a tension there where we get it, like a whole walled garden ecosystem works for some people, but that there's a lot of gain in the Android ecosystem by having like a broad swath of OEMs, but you do lose that integration and this kind of like tight, you know, technical integration, also like personnel integration and company and, you know, team integration. And like part of that, I think they were going into the history of Pixel and like Android itself kind of being a little bit separated because that's the intention, right? Android should be Android and Pixel, like, it's like Android shouldn't serve Pixel first, I guess is the feeling. And I think that was a concern that came up. And I don't know, I think Verge brought it up to Rick. And, you know, I mean, I guess we'll see how it actually, you know, turns out. I mean, Rick gave kind of like, I think, not to be unfair to Rick or anything, a diplomatic answer in that case. But that's kind of my concern is that, you know, is Android going to continue to be a platform for a lot of people and not just, you know, a little too Pixel focused? Because it feels like that sometimes Pixel drops, right? Like, why can't the rest of everyone other than Samsung get the nice things? Is this just going to kind of make that even harder, you know, to overcome, is like the pixelification of everything?
Or in the other direction. Or in the other direction. Is it going to be depixelizing it because Rick has such a great relationship with the OEMs and the other companies and like wants to go more broad? Like, we just literally don't know.
Samsung and Google are collaborating deeper than they have in a very long time. Yeah, Michelle.
So here's basically the overall change that I see happening. It's like for years you had DeepMind, I think Google Brain, as basically in separate companies entirely within Google, basically entirely different teams working on their own projects, doing so much research. And if you recall, like one of the seminal research papers that led to the foundation of like large language models and the ChatGPT that we have today was done by researchers at Google. Mm. And for a long time, they're basically just siloed doing their own research, basically like a research scientist, like a lab at a university doing research
on purpose,
but
right? It was
now on purpose. It was tactical, like that on purpose. But now we're starting to see the commercialization of their research, of their features into Google. And we're seeing that used more and more across Google products. And we see kind of what happens when there's a silo between this research team and the work they're doing and the rest of the company. Like we talked about recently how the Pixel 8 launched with 8 gigabytes of RAM. And that was barely on the threshold of acceptable amount of memory for Google to launch Gemini Nano on. Yep. And that led to them not launching it at all initially until backlash happened. And then they fell back and said, okay, we'll allow it, but you have to enable it, you know, in developer options. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if they had worked more closely from the beginning saying, hey, we think you might want to plan your flagship devices to have at least a minimum 12 gigs of RAM in the future, then, you know, we could have probably avoided this situation. So like having these teams work together is, I think, great for expanding the commercial use of a lot of the Google AI research that we're seeing from the DeepMind and the Google Brain divisions. Yep. And also, I see it as a great opportunity for the Android ecosystem because we're already seeing this play out where Google is releasing Gemini Nano, their Gemini models, and then there are companies that are building features using Gemini as their backend. For example, last week we talked about, or was it last week, OnePlus slash Oppo, they're getting new features that are using Gemini in the backend. And, you know, there's a concern, of course, with Google, you know, putting Android and all the hardware even closer together under one division, that there won't be separation anymore. And then, like, only Android, only Pixel will get the latest features. But we're already seeing that that's not the case, because they're already opening up a lot of the stuff that used to be Pixel exclusive. Like, Pixel used to have all the best machine learning features, and only Pixel will get those features. But now we're seeing so many of these AI features on other devices that are straight up powered by Google's models. That used to not be the case in the past.
Well, time will tell. We'll see. But I think collectively for all of us, we want to wish our good friend Hiroshi goodbye. So take it easy, Hiroshi. I know
you have the jibber jabber Hiroshi.
Not really. I'm faking it. I've got a open mouth and a closed mouth JPEG, and I'm just bouncing between the two.
That works. That works.
There it is. But for our audio listeners, you got to go watch the video, because we have our old Hiroshi talking head from the old Twit days. So
I didn't know you had that.
Yeah, that's magical. I was frantically searching for when Burke sent it to me last November. While we were talking about this.
Say that's you, not only do you have it, that's sharp, that's like source quality.
Now I do want to note that I did not play Taps while we were just showing Hiroshi, because he's still with the company.
Yeah,
you know, like, he is an immensely talented executive. Absolutely. Who has been nothing but kind to us the few times we had the opportunity to talk to him and interview him.
He's been an excellent steward of Android in his time. His position.
Really,
and I feel like I will miss him in that position. Yeah. At the same time, having had some really wonderful conversations with Samir Samat, who I feel like is kind of like taking his place, I'm excited for Samir. I think this is a great opportunity for him to, you know, kind of take the reins a little bit and be a little bit more forward facing. And, you know, when it comes to interfacing with media and a lot of that other stuff that Hiroshi was doing. But real quick, before we move on, anyone else getting a little bit of like Google Plus vibes? Remember however many years ago when Google, like, the hot thing was the social networks, and Google had its Google Plus, and the directive inside was like, all right, let's steer every ship towards this. You've got to integrate it or else. And kind of a similar situation. I don't know if it necessarily will have the same outcome, but I get a little bit of those vibes.
But the thing is that, like, I don't blame them for that, and I don't blame them for this, is that when you're running a company as large as Google, you have to take bets. It's all about taking bets, and what are you going to bet on? And at that time, Google Plus was the right bet, and it didn't pan out, and then you adjust to move on. Right now, AI is the bet, so I don't blame them. So.
Yeah, I don't either.
And I'm just a little bit worried, is that I think traditionally the Android team has been known and infamous at Google for being siloed and isolated, but in that they're going to do their own thing and they're going to do what's best for Android. And that was something that Chet wrote about in his book. And there was like some article last year about how someone basically on the way out of Google, poop talked everything, but with the exception of Android, because they're very fierce in defending their way of, you know, working. And I'm not saying that's going to go away, but I worry about that. And corporate melding, yada, yada. Everybody's OKRs becomes everybody else's problems anyway. Just corporate. Anyway, sorry. Didn't mean to go down that right. But I mean, it's a concern. But we'll see. We've got to be positive. And
we'll tell. We'll see.
The new leadership is great. So we'll see what happens. Good luck to them.
All right. And with that, it's Android 15 time with Michelle Rahman.
That's right, Jason. And as usual, I have a whole bunch of news to cover, and I'll try to do my best to succinctly cover them. So let's start with, I think I'll stream my screen here. That's okay?
Yeah.
So the first piece of news that I want to talk about is a new feature that Google's working on, potentially called Even Dimmer. So the article title that I use is Android 15 may make it even easier to use your phone while in bed. I know a lot of you know it's bad for yourself. You shouldn't be using your phone while in bed, but you do it anyways. And I know I do it too. And you can use a blue light filter and adaptive brightness. But the thing is, with adaptive brightness, a lot of times it doesn't go low enough in brightness to actually be usable in bed. In those situations, you can use this feature, if you're watching the video screen here, called extra dim under accessibility options. The thing about extra dim is, though, you have to manually enable it when you need to use it and then manually disable it when you need to, you know, turn it off. And that can be annoying. I polled users on social media, and a lot of people seem to forget to just turn it off in the morning. And the problem is, when you dim the display and you need to use it out in the sunlight, that's problematic, because then you can barely see anything. This new Even Dimmer feature from what I seem to have uncovered, will allow the device to go even dimmer than usual, which I know sounds a lot like the extra dim feature. But what I think this even dimmer feature will do, and I don't have a screenshot of it, unfortunately, is basically it'll expand the effective range of the adaptive brightness feature. So right now, the adaptive brightness feature has like a set minimum brightness and a set maximum brightness. But when you enable even dimmer, the lower bound of the adaptive brightness feature will be able to go even lower than before. And this will be useful because then you can use your phone at night and the adaptive brightness will go even lower than it previously, than it currently can. But then when you're using your phone throughout the day, like regular, it'll still adaptively adjust the brightness based on the ambient lighting. So basically, this is going to be a version of extra dim that you don't have to remember to turn on and off. It'll just be automatically adapting itself to the brightness. So when it's really dark, really, and you're in a dark room, it'll automatically go really dim, your display. And then when it's, you know, regular brightness throughout the day, it'll just get as bright as it needs. And the next feature is a change that might come in handy if you have a lot of notifications to deal with. So for those of you familiar, notification channels is a feature that groups notifications by categories. Right now, a lot of apps create a ton of notification channels. So if you're watching the video feed, I've kind of zoomed out on this screenshot a lot. But on the right, you can see these are all of Instagram notification channels. There are 25 in total.
Wait a minute. Hold on. This zoom out is like that's kind of crazy.
I had to zoom out all that much. Otherwise, you would not be able to see all the notifications.
So for audio listeners, it is a screenshot of on-off switch that goes, 25 rows of switches, right? Like that's
there are
insane.
25 switches.
Yeah.
25 notification channels that Instagram creates. However, only three of those have ever been actually used. Instagram's only ever sent notifications through three of those channels. And so if you're going through settings and trying to figure out which channels should I disable or enable, it's kind of hard because there's so many that just aren't being used. So this change that I spotted in Android 15, which I'll stress again, is not enabled by default yet, will automatically hide any unused notification channels in settings. And to enable them, you have to tap on this new menu icon and click show used unused channels.
Oh, okay.
And this basically just cleans up significantly the clutter app setting.
In Instagram's defense, the notification API is very difficult, and it's traditionally been like once you set up notification channels, you cannot delete them ever for like compatibility reasons. So a lot of times what happens is when you try to refactor something, you cannot get rid of people's old notification channels. So it's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't, like, you know what I mean? So this is terrible. And I actually have a lot of problems with the Instagram app, but sometimes you can't help it. So I'm glad that the uncluttering can happen at a higher level so that we can do whatever we need to do. And then someone else will clean up the mess. So anyway, just wanted to say that it may not be their fault. It kind of is, but not 100%.
I mean, it's not intentional.
It's not intentional, but it can be very difficult to clean up notifications like for future versions. Like if you make one mistake in how you organize it at the beginning and your feature set changes and you want different notification channels, you're kind of screwed, to be honest. And you have to just work with what you got. So anyway, just wanted to say that it's not like Instagram. I don't know. I'm going to say something nice about Instagram. It's not like Instagram intended for this, but sometimes it happens. Not usually this bad, but you know. Anyway.
Okay, and the next one is a new API called a Storage Lifetime API that will allow the Android operating system to tell you how long your phone's storage chip will last. So, you know, we're getting phones that are getting longer and longer support policies, such as the Pixel 8 and Galaxy S24 with 7 years of updates. Well, you want to know if your hardware will actually last that long. So what Google is working on is a new API that will basically measure the remaining lifetime of your storage chip as a percentage. And this API will be available, will be used by a new device diagnostics app that will tell you, you know, the percentage of your device's remaining storage lifetime. Some devices like Pixel's devices can report the remaining storage lifetime at 1% granularity. In other words, they can report, you know, you have 99% remaining lifetime or 98%, whereas others will report at a less accurate 10% granularity. So like 90% or 80%, you know, only in increments of 10%. Not every device will support this new API. This is something that Android already internally collects, but in Android 15, Google is preparing to expose this value to users through the new device diagnosis app. And as I mentioned, as all the other things that I've talked about, this is not available yet in beta 1. However, I did actually share a method to find this information on Android Police, this article right here. It's actually quite easy to find out. Like here, I have an example in the screenshot for audio listeners of my Pixel 6a showing 99% lifetime remaining of my storage chip because I barely use that phone. It's just a test device. This device diagnosis app also lets you test your display, touch, touchscreen, as well as see some information about your battery health. The next piece of information I wanted to share is a update to screen sharing. Google is looking to implement built-in screen sharing protection features in Android 15. I don't have the exact details on what this will do, but it looks like these new screen sharing protections will apply some kind of mechanisms to protect sensitive app and notification content from being inadvertently shared when you're screen sharing or screen recording. And from what I know, there'll be a new API that apps using UI toolkits like Jetpack Compose and other APIs can use so that possibly they can block specific fields from ending up in screen recordings or screen shares. And there's also another flag that suggests that notifications can be blocked entirely during screen shares. Now, for those of you who are keen observers, if you have a Pixel phone, you know that Android 14 QPR2 introduced a new app screen sharing feature, lets you share a single app screen. This is basically just expanding on that by limiting further what kind of content can even show up in a single app screen recording, or if you have to do a full screen recording, whether or not notifications appear at all, because you know you can accidentally get a really sensitive notification while you're doing a sensitive screen recording. And the last major feature I want to talk about is a enhancement, basically the closing of a loophole in a security feature that Google introduced in Android 13. So in Android 13, Google introduced a feature wherein if you sideload an app that requests a highly sensitive accessibility or notification listener service access, users would not be able to easily grant those permissions to those apps. And the purpose of this is to basically prevent users from accidentally sideloading malicious apps that take total control over your device and listen to all your notifications and send inputs on your behalf. However, the mechanism they use to detect whether or not you're sideloading an app from an app store or not was kind of flawed. Basically, any app could pretend they were an app store and use the same APIs that app stores use to sideload apps. Well, Google is looking to close this loophole in Android 15 with a new enhanced confirmation mode feature that at the system build level has an allow list of installers and packages that are exempt from these restrictions. So this will be a much more clamped down version of that security feature that was introduced in Android 13. And to be honest, it's kind of difficult to explain this in full detail. I wrote a 1100 word article in Android Authority that goes in depth. So if you're interested in this security feature, I highly recommend you go check that out. And lastly, if you are thinking about getting into the Android 15 beta, now is a good time. I warned last week you shouldn't do it because NFC was broken. Well, lo and behold, Google pushed an update that fixes NFC. So now you don't have to go without Google Wallet or contactless payments just if you want to get on the beta. And yeah, if you're wondering why NFC was broken, it's because Google tried to migrate the platform's NFC stack to a new Project Mainline module. And in the process, they kind of messed that up. And I mean, it's not like they did something significantly wrong. It's just there was just an error in the way they migrated.
They're human too. Mistakes happen.
Yep.
It's a big switch, so I actually got an update today, so I'll try NFC payments next time I get a chance to.
Cool.
I thought you were going to say, last week I warned you not to do it, and you did it anyways. Which is probably true for someone out there.
So it's important to note that we are less than a month out of Google I.O.
Oh, geez.
Right? And so I got to imagine there's going to be a lot of Android 15 talk coming out of that, right? And as the beta rolls on, we'll start looking at the timelines of when this rolls out and start taking bets. Is it before or after Labor Day? And, all the fun stuff that's going to happen with the new version. So
A lot of exciting stuff coming up. Going to Google I.O. Yep. I got that to look forward to.
Very cool.
Very, very nice. All right. Well, Meta. So what the heck is Meta up to these days? It turns out, you know, it all, a lot of it has to do with AI, yes, but also VR. Meta is opening up its Horizon OS. Before this kind of naming, it was just called Quest. But this is the operating system running Android, actually, because the Quest devices are running Android, if you didn't know. That powers the Quest VR hardware. Mark Zuckerberg says this is going to encourage more purpose-specific devices by third parties. So, for example, there's a couple of partners. Asus with the Republic of Gamers brand doing a headset specific to gaming. Lenovo doing a general purpose productivity headset. Xbox and Meta partnering up to do a bundled like gaming version of a headset with a bundled Xbox controller and Xbox Cloud Gaming and Game Pass. So the idea would be that through these third-party partnerships, creating very specific hardware, right? Like it could be a headset that is specific to fitness that you don't want a heavy headset when you're doing a fitness, you know, using it for fitness. So maybe this is a headset that's specific to fitness that's meant to be lightweight and meant to be perfect and ideal in the fitness environment.
Hopefully it's washable. Ugh. Sorry.
That's always how I feel too about the VR headsets and then fitness. It's like, okay, wait a minute. You're sweating a lot. That, you know, you better.
That band.
It,
right?
The band better be washable, yeah. And then you better be washing it. Like, it might be washable and you still just don't because, it's just me wearing it. But,
other than that, that's a great idea, though. Sorry, I just.
What I think is so funny is that a suit, like, even when I was prepping for the show and I saw the story coming up, I'm like, oh, Meta and whatever. But, like in the world of VR and stuff like that, like, all the talk about Apple Vision Pro has gone off a cliff, right? Like, nobody cares anymore. Like, they came out and, like, whatever. And meanwhile, I have not one but two friends in the normal world whose all kids have a Quest VR headset, and, like, that's what they primarily play. Like, that. My kid, I asked my buddy what video games does his kid play, and he says all he plays is Gorilla Tag on his Quest VR headset.
Ah, right? Gorilla Tag.
It feels like Meta is actually succeeding in this place because they've committed.
Well, and they bought the IP from Oculus at the right time, and then put all their resources into it, and then they renamed their company after the Metaverse to kind of like lean into it, whether that was a good idea or not.
Like Google Plus, right?
Yeah, the Google. Yeah.
Well, the thing about like this whole announcement
You're on mute.
No, I can hear.
You sure? Okay, yeah.
Yep.
So the whole thing about this announcement is, you know, Zuckerberg and Meta, they've been really big on, you know, the metaverse as a platform, as much as I hate that term, and like promoting, you know, virtual reality, XR, and et cetera, you know, apps and software. But the thing is, so far, they've been the only one building successful XR hardware, you know, apart from Apple, which is its entirely own closed ecosystem. So what Meta is doing here is they're positioning themselves to become the Android of XR, and which is weird, I know, to say, because Horizon OS is itself based on Android. But the thing is, they and Google don't see eye to eye. They couldn't come to an agreement. So Google is about to release its own Android of XR, aka Android XR OS, heavily rumored to be announced next month at Google I/O. But ahead of that, Meta is preempting them and announcing its own, you know, open Android ecosystem for other hardware partners to fork. Because right now, you know, Qualcomm earlier this year, I think at CES, they announced the Snapdragon XR 2 Plus Gen 2, their latest, you know, chipset for XR headsets. But the thing is, if all these other companies were to try to build products based on that chipset, they would all be using Qualcomm's reference platform, all the software that's available. But a lot of what they've been missing is all the stuff that Meta has been spent billions and years building, which is a software ecosystem. So all those other headsets would basically be doomed dead on arrival because they just would not have the years of experience and all that work that Meta has done to fork Android and improve it and also build all these you know, these applications and all these things that already exist on their ecosystem. So they're basically licensing their operating system which is what Google's model was all this time. And they're getting ahead of Google doing this on the Android XR side. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, next month when we have two competing, yeah, but both based on Android versions of this XR ecosystem. To be honest, I'm a little doubting whether or not Google's is going to have as much success, just because Meta has so many years ahead of Google.
Yeah, they do.
When it comes to XR,
to a certain degree, they've proven themselves at this point too. Like they've delivered, yeah, on many of the
they committed, and I gotta say though, I mean,
they didn't get distracted.
Michelle, that whole story that you just laid out sounds a whole lot like competition to me, and that's good yeah, for consumers and good for the marketplace. You know, you don't want just one player dominating and doing all that. Like, we want to have options, and that's how innovation gets driven. And you know, who knows what can happen down the road? So
it's interesting.
Know what this is good for?
What's that?
This is good for Apple.
Yeah,
having this fragmentation in the Android XR space, like the best position that Google and Meta could have to compete against Apple will be working together. But if that's not going to happen, Apple is the one who benefits hugely from this.
Well, I mean, I don't. Yeah, they might, but it's not like they're blowing the doors. I just saw an article the other day on Gizmodo that was about how nobody cares about the Vision Plus anymore.
How much is it again? Like $3,500. Okay, then yeah,
it is a Gen 1.
It is a development kit for,
although they don't market it as a developer product.
Yeah, I mean, it basically is a developer kit, a consumer facing developer kit. And we've all heard the rumors that Gen 4 of the Apple Vision Pro will be the one. Like, you got to go four generations before the price comes down and all that sort of stuff. But like, at this point, does Apple have the time to catch up to Meta? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I don't think they're doing a yearly iteration cycle.
And honestly, I love what Meta and Ray-Bans are doing with those glasses. And I'm so tempted to get a pair, right? Because it just seems really, really cool.
I mean, I was kind of a little bit like, I was paying attention to the article, but I was kind of like, yeah. But the whole third party thing, and especially if I could get like Asus, like as big Asus gaming, you know, of the big Asus gaming family, like, yeah, that is compelling. You know what I mean? Like, so I actually kind of perked up like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I might actually stop smirking when I hear Meta and VR and pay attention. And actually, I don't know. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me that, Michelle, you called this the Meta doing for VR and XR, you know, what, you know, Google did with Android for smartphones and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually makes a lot of sense when you put it that way, because Meta's not only doing that with VR and XR, like they just, you know, released their open source AI, the Meta.ai. And they're opening that as well. So they're kind of doing the Android for AI as well, bringing this like incredibly powerful AI platform to everyone for free, allowing everyone to build on top of it. Whereas others are being very closed off on how they're doing that stuff. So in a strange way, Meta is really, their strategy right now seems to be pretty open, which is just weird to say about a company like Meta that historically has not been.
Yeah.
But that seems to be their focus right now. And I want that. I think that's great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Moving on.
Moving on up.
I think so.
To the east side.
So want to thank again our supporting folks over at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful, because every week you all get to vote on a new story for us to discuss here on the show. And also last week I asked you to send in some Bug Droid artwork, and boy, did you folks deliver.
Oh really?
Including this gem by Raven Simonette. From the Bahamas, who lives in the Bahamas and said wanted to and does a lot of diving and stuff like that, so wanted a Bug Droid reading the news underwater in a scuba with a Bahamas flag or close to a Bahamas flag. And this is possibly one of the best ones we've received as of yet. So the bar has been raised. If you're listening to the audio show, please go to our Instagram or social. I posted this on Monday. That's how good this graphic was of a Bug Droid underwater,
really
created by AI reading a tablet that I hope is waterproof underwater to get all the latest Android news.
Well, it's lit up. I mean, it's lighting the bug.
What IP is
chest,
it?
So
yeah. What is the IPV rating? That's what
it's
I want.
Still
to know.
Working, at least at the point of this photo.
Yeah,
this exactly.
Raven, this is awesome. This is beautiful and it's fun. And thank you. That was Dude, yeah. My goodness.
Impressive.
Raven wins. So the news stories that patrons could vote on over at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful this week, coming in last was the one I was hoping was going to win. The fact that the electric vehicle car maker Polestar's upcoming smartphone looks surprisingly good because for some reason Polestar is making an Android phone. That got 19% of the vote. Coming in second at 27% of the vote was the Pixel tablet will let you look and sign to assistant. And then finally the winner, which we're going to discuss right now, is the fact that YouTube's new AI feature is actually really helpful. And there it is. Drink again. We're talking about AI. Google AI, it's all in the mix. And now YouTube is getting its own AI injection into the Android app in the form of an ask button. So if you're watching a video and you see this ask button, you can click on it and you can type questions in about the video, and AI will answer the question, will answer your questions, as opposed to just watching the video. This is only available to YouTube Premium subscribers in the US via the Android app. And yes, you can ask it to summarize the video, so you don't need to watch it. And this will be available. It's only available until May 1st publicly. So it's a little bit of a test that they're doing with it. And I do find we know that Google is plugging AI into as much as they can. And I didn't use this on the YouTube side, but I laugh at the Gmail integration because all my email in Gmail now has a little summarize this email button, which I could just read the email.
Yeah. Well, right? But if it's a long email, you could read the summary.
Yeah, but when was the last time you got a long enough email you need to be summarized? Yeah. And this summarize the video, just watch the video.
I should probably not say it out loud because apparently I'm basing my career on video on YouTube. But I mean, sometimes you got to wait, like, if this is like, here's all the steps to do this thing and it's a 10-minute video, like, okay, I can click that button and get a good idea of what the summary is pretty fast, you know? What I'm curious about is, does that button existing on a page, and mind you, they're testing this. I don't think it's permanent yet. I think it actually goes away at the end of the month and it'll probably be brought back for good at some point. But in their tests, what are they finding about their ability to serve ads on YouTube content when someone goes to it and summarizes instead of watching? Does that actually impact their bottom line? I imagine to a large, on a broad scale, it would. I have to imagine. So then, how are they getting around that?
Also, I wonder, I'm not an expert by any means on the YouTube algorithm. I know it changes, but I feel like watch minutes like also affect it as well. So,
100%. We know that is a key indicator.
Attention.
Like impressions and stuff like that. So what is this going to do to that? It's like,
And I'm also realizing the answer to my question, what does this do to ads? Nothing, because you only have this feature if you're a premium subscriber. So you don't get it.
There it is.
Doesn't influence anything as far as that's concerned anyways. But it will mess with view stats, how long does someone stay on a video before clicking away? All of these stats that I've now learned you can track with great granularity through the Studio app. That's interesting.
I have it. I just did it live now. I was watching bloopers of Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. Mm-hmm. I saw something funny and I showed my wife it. I was like, just right now. So I just typed in, I'm like, who was the third person in the video? Right.
Oh, and boy, did it know?
I'm sorry, but the video doesn't mention anything about a third person being present. So your mileage may vary. I think it's still.
I thought I turned it on, but I don't have it showing up yet.
I mean, summarize the video. Like it's just gonna repurpose the description for me.
No. It's not because
it totally did. This video features bloopers from Between Two Ferns, hosted by Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's poor. That's a poor summarization.
I mean, this is an entertainment video. I mean, like versus an informational video, or God forbid a podcast, right? Like you can say, ask more detailed questions and things like that. But I don't know. I feel like you're going to spend more time trying to get the AI to give you the answer you're looking for when you could just watch the video and get the answer you're looking for.
I mean, I will be completely honest.
I mean, maybe it'll be really helpful for like long seminars or lectures.
Totally.
Like that, where there's like so much information and like a really huge transcript.
Yep.
You'd otherwise have to like, it'd be a hassle to look
Possibly. I mean, this also goes part and parcel with my complaint about the changes to search. in that the number of times I search Google for a specific, like, how to fix the lint trap on my dryer or whatever it is, and the fact that you're getting videos of how to repair a dryer in response versus, like, I'm looking for text. I need an answer quickly. And even the fact that they've injected videos into the questions as answers, so you get those four rows of questions and then you expand it and you get a video, it drives me crazy, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't want a video. I want the, like, what happened to WikiHow, right? Like, what is the, like, I'm looking for the text answer to a technical question. Like, what size screw goes in whatever, you know? But, like, it frustrates me, so.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll see how it goes. I don't know. It's neat. I'm gonna play with it as much as I can before May 1st and see how it feels. But all right. But before we move on to hardware, we do have to thank our patrons, because you guys are fantastic. Everyone who signs up on patreon.com/AndroidFaithful gets a shout out on the show. And this week we're thanking Jeremiah Borkowski, Andrew Hitchcock, Per Eric Eck from Sweden. International, there it is. Mm-hmm. Eric DiStefano, and I hope I don't mispronounce this, Ryu Monastis. And Ryu likes everything we post on Patreon. I always see Ryu's like your post.
Nice.
So thank you everybody for your support. And you too can get your name shouted out on the show by signing up at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful.
Yeah. So, we love reading names, because that means there's a lot of you out there. So
many. Yeah. We're trying to catch up. We're trying to get to everybody.
I know. We're now at 5 per episode. That's amazing.
Wonderful problem to have. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. We got hardware. A lot. You know, some pretty interesting stuff coming up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
All right, starting with you, Michelle, because you got in your hands something that I would love to have in my ears. That's weird.
That's right, Jason.
That's weird.
Well, it's not in my hands yet, but it is right now. I have the Nothing Ear A earbuds.
And you got the yellow ones, which I'm jealous of.
The yellow ones, yes. Awesome. You posted a teaser with the white ear ones, and I'm like, I have the yellow ones. I think they sent the yellow ones to every reviewer out there.
That's so
cool. And so, let me switch my camera over. So, Nothing announced this on Thursday, the Nothing Ear A and the Nothing Ear. It's the third generation. The other one is the third generation earbuds. I don't have those. I only have the more affordable Ear A. These retail for $99. And I think, like, actually looking at the spec differences between this and the Ear 3, or just the Ear, I guess. Yeah. I think this is the more interesting of the two products. First of all, this comes in, as you can see, a bright yellow color, whereas the other one only comes in, I think, white and black. I think that's significantly better design than just a plain old white and black earbud. I think these look great. They sound great. The battery life is great. They feel great. There's so many things that these $99 earbuds do great that you know, a lot of other earbuds in this price range fail at, that I just think these are a really great option if you're looking for great affordable earbuds that work well with Android phones in particular. So I've paired it to a Nothing Phone 2 that I have right here. And let me just show you the design a little bit of these earbuds. So you can see in the case is transparent, which is Nothing's signature design. You can see right through and the earbuds. It's quite big, actually. I don't really like how wide this earbud is, the earbud case is, but it is kind of light because it's all plasticky. And you can see it kind of opens and snaps shut pretty quickly. Let me open it up, and then they pair to my Nothing Phone 2 right there. Let's take a look, closer look at the earbuds. You can see it has like plastic all over the design and these little silicone ear tips. I don't know if you like these kind of design. I don't know what they call this kind of design, like the one that stick out. Personally, they're pretty comfortable for me. I haven't had any issues with comfort or long time use or anything like that. But I guess like if I had one complaint about the earbuds, it's that in order to change, you know, like actually control the earbuds, you have to kind of pinch right here to do anything. Mm. And I have, that's been very inconsistent for me. Pinching has just not worked.
Is it a button like or is it capacitive?
You get used, it's capacitive. You got to pinch.
It's capacitive. I do not like it's the it's the same thing on the ear sticks that I have. And Michelle, it takes some getting used to. Now I'm a pro pincher.
you're a pro pincher.
Yeah. Once you figure out the pressure and the points and stuff like that, then it goes pretty quickly. But yeah, it does take a second to ramp up to how to use them.
I have to be honest. I also have both the ear sticks and the ear ones, and I never got used to it. I kind of use my phone to control it, but I also just kind of gave up on getting used to them, so didn't like it myself.
Yeah, so the cool thing about these earbuds, they're $99, but they also support active noise cancellation. They have three noise cancellation modes. You know, they have the regular, disabled, noise cancellation, and transparency. They do this kind of weird thing where they like kind of like whisper in your ear, like, ah, when you change
modes,
and it's so weird. I'm like, please stop
it's
doing
like
that.
ASMR.
Please. Change it. It's like ASMR, but it's like,
audience.
No, I don't want to hear this.
they start eating noodles in your ear.
Oh, yeah.
No good.
They support a lot of features, surprisingly, despite being $99. Like all these, the night mode is turned on, so it's turned the screen orange. So you can see here that you have double pinch, triple pinch and hold commands, double pinch and hold. And one of the features they recently introduced with the Nothing OS 2.5.5 update is the ability to have ChatGPT as your assistant. So you can long press on your earbud stem. You know, I can't really show it here that well. Actually, I might be able to do it. Let's see. Do a live demo. Those never go wrong, right?
Everything works in a live demo.
Oh, there you go.
Oh,
it's
connecting.
Launching ChatGPT. It worked. Okay. So you can see, like, you can launch ChatGPT instead of the default Gemini/Google Assistant if you set that pinch and hold command in the Nothing X app, which is what I'm using to control the device. You can also do, you know, your usual control, single pinch, play, pause, change tracks, change volume, etc. You can also enable bass enhance, which is enabled by default. I actually have found that the bass is a bit heavy to my liking in the default, so after this is over, I'll probably turn this off because I like more neutral sounding, sound audio coming from my device. But if you, for whatever reason, don't like the default tuning, besides bass enhance, you can also go to the equalizer in the Nothing X app and change a lot of settings here. See, custom, you can even kind of, you know, you don't have a 10 band traditional equalizer because Nothing has their own, this like three circular view, but you know, you can play around with that. Hmm. There's also a couple other features. Standard in-ear detection, when you take it out of your ears, it stops playing music. You also have a low latency mode, a high quality audio mode that streams using the LDAC codec, which drains more battery life. By default, it supports the SBC and the AAC codec. You also have Find My Earbuds, which plays audio. And also, these earbuds support Google Fast Pair and other Google-related features, so it's really easy to connect your earbuds to your device and disconnect them and reconnect them to another device. Like, I haven't had any trouble switching between my Nothing phone to my smartwatch and my TV whenever I want to use these earbuds on all my different devices. So yeah, I'd say these earbuds for $99, they are definitely worth the price, especially with the standout design. Like, earbuds are a commodity item these days. You can find so many different earbuds at for every sure. different price point. You really need something to stand out. And I think the earbuds, the Nothing standout feature is the design and just everything else. It does right, generally. Like I said, I'm not that big of a fan of the pinch controls, but everything else is done really well. And just the design itself is a selling point of these earbuds.
The yellow and black design has a real Sony Walkman late 90s vibe.
For sure.
You know, if you're so like, I don't know, Nothing's probably going for a more modern look, but there is a little retro aspect to that yellow and black kind of combo.
Yeah.
I was thinking more Kill Bill that matches her like that. Bruce Lee.
It's a generational thing.
Yeah, but totally generational.
This is totally Walkman to me, but yes, I see Kill Bill too. And Bumblebee from Transformers.
Yes.
So just a quick summary, like, what are you missing if you get the Ear A versus the Ear 3? So, like, Nothing has a table that lists some of the differences in the features. And the only features you're really missing by not paying $50 more is you're not getting the LHDC 5.0 codec, which is kind of rarely used anyways. You're not getting advanced equalizer and profile sharing or the personal sound profile feature. You still get ANC, as I mentioned. You get up to 9.5 hours without ANC in battery life. You still get 10 fast charging with 10 minutes for 10 hours if you plug it in with a USB-C cable. You don't get wireless charging, which is one of the, you know, the bigger missing features. But you also do get IP54 water resistance for the earbuds and IPX2 resistance for the case. I'll say that IP54 rating did come in handy because the other day I did drop my right earbud in the sink when there was water in it.
Dope.
And I panicked, but nice. I saved it. I rescued it using the old, tossing it in a Ziploc bag with rice and then use the hair dryer with like at cool settings. And it's, I rescued it. It works just fine.
Excellent.
Cool. Very cool.
Didn't have another oopsie this time.
Nice. Well, I still continue to like Nothing. I like what Nothing does. I hope there's another ear stick version coming, because I don't like the as everyone knows, I don't like the in-ear ones. I love my ear stick. I'm on my second pair of the OG ear stick because my old ones were out of warranty and weren't charging. The case wasn't charging anymore. So I'm like, I'll just buy another pair because they're low cost enough. Like $99 is a great price. So yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And I mean, come in yellow.
Yeah.
Like you said, Michelle, these earbuds, they are a total commodity at this point. And they have a total shelf life too, right? Like, there's a little battery in there. Depending on how long you use these things, you will reach a point to where either the battery is just so poor it doesn't, you know, last very long, or the thing stops working altogether for whatever reason. And you're just going to have to replace it. And like, I'm not saying that about these particular earbuds, but my experience with other true wireless earbuds is, you know, you get 2 to 3 years out of them and then you got to replace them. You just, you know, they don't last forever.
Yeah. So they're just total commodities at mm-hmm. this point. So you need something that makes them stand out. And the design, certainly one of the points that makes it stand out.
Yeah.
Right on. Cool.
Very interesting.
All right. So what else is going on, Jason? What's going on with OnePlus?
OnePlus Pad 2 is apparently coming, and don't have a whole lot of information on this, from this rumor, which is basically all we have right now, according to Max Jambor. Hambor? Hamon? Sorry, Max. I can't be the only one to have said that, or maybe I am. Who knows? But I apologize. OnePlus Pad 2, stepping up the processor power over the first one. The first one had the MediaTek Dimensity 9000. This one, according to Max, is going to have the Snapdragon 8 Gen 3. And Michelle, you have the original. I never experienced the. Did I? I don't think I did. The OnePlus Pad? I don't know. Maybe they're all blending together. I don't remember.
I think you did.
Did I have it?
You did have it. And we were talking about Ron Amadio's like terrible review, and then you came on and were like,
"Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Sorry, I had to. And I had to remind myself. That seemed like ages ago. That was just a little more than a year ago. Look, folks, lots
a year and a whole
year,
show.
Okay?
And like, yeah,
lots happened in the last year. That's right. I did have the OnePlus Pad. You still have yours, Michelle?
Yeah.
Yeah. How has it stood the test of time over time? How has it stood up?
I mean, it's an Android tablet, so I don't use it for like serious work, unfortunately, because Android just still isn't there compared to Windows. But it's nice as a media consumption device. Like, it has surprisingly a lot going for it, considering its price. Mm-hmm. You also get, I think you can get it bundled, or does it come with the device, the keyboard and the stylus? I think those come separate,
right.
But they're pretty affordable. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get all the tablet, the keyboard, and the stylus for pretty cheap compared to other devices. And considering it runs the Oxygen OS with all the tablet enhancements that they've added, I don't think they have the full Open Canvas feature that they debuted on the OnePlus Open, unfortunately. But, you know, it's a really capable tablet for its price.
Yeah.
The year of the tablet,
that's
2024,
pretty much what,
man.
I'll say, yeah.
OnePlus is getting involved. Google's committed. Year of the tablet. It's finally going to happen. All right, so Wynn, how about what's going on with Huawei?
What's going on with Huawei is celebrating the 12th anniversary of their P series with the Pura.
It sounds like a cat food.
Pura.
Pura.
I read it as pura. Yeah, pura. Like when I'm in Costa Rica, everybody says pura vida. You know,
if it was life. Japanese, it'd be pura, but pura. Well, let's call it Pura 70 family, which is and the P series is known for being photocentric. And they're really interesting, really pretty phones. They do distinguish themselves with a triangular camera bump. It seems that basically the best way to tell phones apart these days is the shape of their bumps. And this one is triangular with a three lens unit. And of course, this is the series of phones, these three phones, the Pura 70, 70 Pro, and 70 Pro Plus, are all using according to who you ask, sorry, I'll explain what happened in just a second. Depending on who you ask, the slightly contentious Kirin 9010 chipset made by Huawei. So the Huawei Pura 70 is the baseline model. It's a 6.6-inch, 120Hz LTPO OLED display with a 2760x1256 res. It's got the 50-megapixel main camera, 13-megapixel ultra-wide, and a 12-megapixel 5X telephoto, 4,900 milliamp battery with 66-watt wire charging, 50-watt wireless charging, and it starts at about, call it 5,500 yuan, about 760 USD for a 12 gigabyte of RAM, 256 gigabyte of storage version. So yes. And comes in very, very shiny colorways. Now, the 70 Pro and 70 Pro Plus are really similar and not too far off from the specs of the baseline model. It's a 6.8-inch screen on both of these as opposed to the 6.6 on the baseline model. Same hertz, a slightly bigger resolution at 2844x1260 resolution. And kind of a very similar camera units with a 50-megapixel main, 12.5-megapixel ultra-wide, but a 48-megapixel 3.5 telephoto. Slightly bigger battery, as kind of like a slightly bigger phone might imply, with a 5,050 milliamp battery, 100-watt wire charging, and 80-watt wireless charging. And how they differentiate is kind of a few more features. The Pro itself has 12 gigabytes of RAM with 256 gigabytes of storage for 6,500 yuan, which is about $900. The Pro Plus has 16 gigabytes of RAM and satellite messaging. So that's pretty interesting as kind of a distinguishing Super Pro Plus feature. And it comes with 512 gigabytes of storage. No word yet on whether this is going to be available outside of China. I mean, we probably certainly will not be getting our hands on them on this show. Nope. But they are really beautiful phones. And, you know, obviously it'll be interesting to see, especially with this new chipset made by Huawei, how, you know, performance and how like the consumers like these phones. But they're really attractive. And we'll have to see how the photos that come out of this photocentric line shape up. So there you go.
I like that purple colorway, and I got to admit the back, the camera unit and the detailing on the back of the phone look really cool, and the dramatic photography of the phone and the person and then the left of the phone.
I was going to say it's very Matrix.
Yeah, very Matrixy. Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of interested in trying it out, considering you know I actually have the Huawei P60 Pro right here.
Yep.
I was actually using it as a webcam for my hands on like. I got this device last year just because I really like the camera, and I'm kind of curious to see how the P70 compares. Yeah. Pura 70, I guess they call it now.
Pura.
Like Pura. Pura. Okay, so. Pura. That kind of makes sense.
Well, cool. Well, talking about cameras, Michelle, you might want to check out the upcoming Tecno Camon 30 Premiere. Because that is all about the camera. We've been talking with Tecno's been on the edges of what we've been talking about for the past year. I know, when you and I are both very, very curious about this company, they have a ton of market share in Africa. But this phone is actually going to be available globally, starting May 2024. It was first shown at Mobile World Congress in February, and it's the premiere of their own imaging system. It's got 4K 30 FPS full scene AI noise reduction HDR video capability, which is a ton to say. And it's got great light and color in your video, even in low light situations. They've got 4 50 megapixel sensors and 3x optical zooms. Optical zoom, I can't say that. You know, it's an interesting looking phone. It's 6.77 inches. It's being powered by a MediaTek Dimensity 8200 Ultimate 5G chip. They got 24 gig of RAM, 12 gig extended, and 512 gig of storage. 5,000 milliamp battery with 70 watt fast charging, so 0 to 50% in 16 minutes. And they've got AI camera features like AI erase and universal tone for accurate skin tones. So Tecno packing in the punch in terms of like a camera phone, you know, with the AI features and with their own, you know, their own imaging system. They're kind of growing up and making a play into the camera space.
Smart breathing light is what this promotional video called out on the back. What the heck is a breathing light?
That's crazy. It's got Dolby Atmos.
I would love to get my hands on this phone. Like they've been making a lot of waves with affordable phones, and not that, you know, we don't have many other phones to kind of review, but yeah, I'm kind of a big Tecno fan, like kind of in a far away parasocial way. I'd love to, like, you know, actually personally meet a Tecno and spend some time with it. That sounds really weird, but I mean, that's how much we like Tecno around here, I guess.
Yeah, between me and Ron. I will say pricing has not been confirmed. And it's, you know, likely going to vary by region, and they haven't confirmed it's going to be available in the United States or not, even though it's got a global launch. So we'll see, but, very, very curious. I'd love to get my hands on one of these. So
unfortunately, when a lot of these smartphone companies say global, they usually mean excluding the US.
Except the US, right? Yeah. So anyway, all right, cool.
True.
Some good hardware. Let's get into some apps.
Yeah.
Let's
do ramble it. Through the apps.
All right, Wynn.
Starting with you, Wynn.
And just real quick, TikTok is releasing a kind of Instagram competitor called TikTok Notes, and that's mostly what we know about it. It is only available in select regions. I tried to download it today, could not. I got a little nasty note from Google Play saying not available in your region. The thing that distinguishes TikTok Notes from Instagram will be its staggered grid layout, where normally with Instagram in your feed, you see one post at a time, kind of like in a vertical column. This is more like a staggered row. Staggered grid. That's actually an Android term. And so think of it as Pinterest plus Instagram.
That was exactly what I thought. When I saw the screenshot, I was like, what is this, Pinterest?
Right? Yeah. It's
like,
Pinterest. Oh, yeah. Yeah, imagine Pinterest, but with TikToks.
Yep.
That's it.
Pintalks.
And this is great timing to roll out a new app right when they're about to get banned in the United States.
I was just going
to
say, like, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it claimed to clear focus when Play Store had that little red message, like, not available in your region. It's like, I see things have come to bear. But yeah, there's other similarities with Instagram. It's going to have photo carousels, chronological and algorithmic feeds, comment controls, and more. So I guess if you're in a region that has TikTok Notes, which, by the way, I don't like the name at all, TikTok Notes, and it looks TikTok like Pinterest. Notes.
Yeah.
Who knows? But if you are able to use TikTok Notes and have some feedback for us, write us contact@andrewfiesel.com, because I am definitely curious. Maybe one day it'll come to the U.S.
Notes makes
maybe
it sound...
one day, maybe never. Win? Haven't you been following the news?
I know. I'm just saying maybe.
Maybe.
That's why I want someone to let me know what it's like.
Notes makes it sound like a productivity app versus like a photo consumption. Like, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with Instagram. I don't get it. I think the branding is off, but who knows?
Anyway, all right. Well, Google rolled out, as usual, a bunch of stuff to the Google suite of apps. So we're going to blow through. Me and Jason are going to blow through them right now. Google Messages is rolling out the selfie GIF. Excuse me while I vomit. Users can record a 3-second GIF of themselves. All you got to do is long press the camera icon in the text field or tap a prompt in the conversation. The GIF recording starts and stops automatically with a brief countdown. And you can also manually start and restart the recording. And these short selfie GIFs are saved. And this feature is not widely available even in beta versions of the app quite yet, but it is coming whether I like it or not. Do we need this in the world? I say thee nay. But whatever. People love GIFs. And yeah. So.
Yeah. It's not for you, Ron. It's not sorting your inbox.
Well, what I think could be interesting and what might happen with this is, can you use the GIFs in other apps? Because then does this become a quick GIF maker tool for people to use across messaging? Well, you know,
it says right there in the bottom that your of the screen you're showing right now that there's save to your camera roll for easy shareable access.
There you go.
So yep. So this could be if you're yearning for a quick way to make a quick GIF of your video of yourself or something like that, this could be the way to do it. So. All right. And then over in Google Photos, they're rolling out some new features based on code spotted by Assemble Debug. Good folks over at Assemble Debug. The first one is hide clutter option, which allows users to hide backed up memes, screenshots, and GIFs from their main photos tab, which I absolutely need. Oh, my gosh. Revamp Memories UI, which will display uniform rounded rectangles with a thumbnail image from the album, which is also very useful. Disable AI memory title suggestions. Allow users to turn off the AI-generated title suggestions for memories in Google Photos because they are so cheesy. Then clear cloud storage from the app. Google Photos is also preparing to introduce an option to clear cloud storage space directly from the app with a single tap. I am very – if you take a look at the changelog of Google Photos over the past year and a half, 2 years, that product team has just been cranking. Right. Like there's been so much on the Google Photos side, and every time they roll out something, they're like, oh, that's handy. Like I just got the stacks activated in my Google Photos and I was like, oh, that's great. It cleared up my library. I'm pro what they're doing on the Google Photos side. Not so much on the Google Messages side. So
you don't like your GIFs.
No.
Unless they're in Google Photos, then you like your GIFs.
Well, or they're like a movie that I like, or, you know, yeah. Like, yeah, so, yeah.
What about Maps? Because Maps is getting a bunch of stuff too. It's one of those apps that continues to get a lot of new features. Sometimes some of it feels a little bloaty, but some of the features coming actually very handy if you've got an electric vehicle. A bunch of EV specific features coming to Google Maps. It's going to show AI powered summaries describing the location of EV chargers based on user reviews, so it can kind of summarize. You know, enter the underground parking lot and follow the signs toward the exit. Just before exiting, turn right. Give you that kind of information that's pulling from reviews. When you're searching for nearby chargers, Maps will actually display real-time information, like which ports are available, the charging speed of those ports, so you can find the right one for you. When you're trip planning, Maps will suggest optimal charging stops along multi-stop routes, and that ties into your vehicle's charge level and trip details, so it knows like that you've got, you know, enough power in your vehicle to make it to that next charger, or you should stop sooner. A lot of the EVs that have the built-in system do this already, so this is kind of replicating that, but in the Maps app. Google Travel Search will have a new filter to find hotels with on-site EV charging stations. A lot of EV stuff here. And users can leave more detailed reviews about their experiences at EV charging stations, such as like the type of plug that was used, the amount of time they had to wait, all that kind of stuff.
I got to say, I when I was in Texas in March, when I was in Dallas, I rented an EV, a Hyundai Ioniq or whatever it was. And I've casually driven my friend's Tesla, like we were at a wedding and I just drove it to the hotel and back, like that. But it was my first time of having an electric car for like an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. And it was like worrying about my cell phone battery times 25, because like I'm in a strange city, I'm in a strange car, yeah. I'm watching the battery percentage go down. I don't even know where a charger is or how to do it. So this would be welcome in that situation.
For sure. Was, yeah, that's not an ideal situation to be put into your first
so
kind
stressful.
Of like EV.
So
you
stressful.
Get used to it, you know, as with anything, and that goes away. But yeah.
I mean, that's why Hertz is trying to sell off all its Tesla stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. And then Google Maps is prepping satellite connectivity features as well. The new feature is going to allow users to update their location and maps every 15 minutes via satellite, up to 5 times per day. So basically like a safety precaution feature sort of thing.
Cool.
Built into maps based on code. So this isn't something that has really been announced necessarily, but will likely come in the future. And that is the Google Maps update. There you go.
Seeing that title makes you think Google Maps preparing satellite connectivity features. Don't you mean GPS?
Yeah. That's true.
That is true. That is a little
different satellite though.
Yep. All right, cool. So that's gonna wrap it up for apps. Let's dive into, we got a bunch of emails in response to the recent episodes, in response to last week's episode actually. So let's get right into them. Wynn, you've got the first email.
And the first email is in response to the interesting poll that we took last week on what VPN do all of us use and why isn't it Google One's VPN? Well, guess what? Timothy Carter wrote us in to let us know that, hey, he just wanted to say that the VPN was the main reason I subscribed to Google One. I use it on my Pixel 6 Pro, which also seems to have Circle to Search. Sorry, Ron. And have the family sharing options so my wife can use it on her Samsung S20. Timothy Carter. Timothy, thank you for writing us and letting us know that someone was definitely using it. So
there it is.
Apologies to you that it is going away.
The whole reason to have Google One was for the VPN. That's
wow.
Wild. So I guess the question is that, Timothy, are you going to get rid of Google One now that it doesn't have the VPN?
I don't know. What's the next best option for you? Yeah, let us
Nord,
know.
Nord or
Nord
or Proton.
Nord.
Or
Nord. Yeah,
bunch of options.
Nord.
Out there. All right. Our next email comes in from Mike from Ohio, who says, hey, this is Mike following up on setting the Pixel Watch 2 ringtone from last week's episode. If you remember last week, he wrote in complaining about his Pixel Watch 2 not being able to change the ringtone. Not wanting to, quote unquote, muck around with ADB debugging, I purchased the Feel the Wear 2 app from the Google Play Store, which is the one that I found and suggested. I installed it on my Pixel 6a phone and Pixel Watch 2. After enabling permissions on my phone to notifications, I was able to set my Pixel Watch 2 ringtone to one of 4 options in the Feel the Wear 2 app. I wish there were more ringtones to choose from or the ability to select one from the phone. Beggars can't be choosers. Well, they can, but this is a step in the right direction. Hey, G, enable ringtone selection on your watch like your competitors have done in their Wear OS implementations. Keep up the great work. Keep up the great podcast. Mike in Ohio. At least one step closer from not being able to change the ringtone at all on the Pixel Watch 2 to using Feel the Wear 2 and having 4 ringtones to choose from. That's progress. But not being able to pick your own ringtone, I find just baffling. It just seems like that's just such simple functionality to have with the watch.
Yeah.
But yeah. So.
Totally agree.
Well, Mike, I'm glad you got some customization going on in there.
And our last email comes in from Andrew from Ontario, who writes in to say, hello from thawing Northern Ontario. During episode 40, it was mentioned that Android 15 would introduce a new home control screensaver, which immediately caught my attention. I have repurposed a Samsung Galaxy A10 that I use to control my smart lights. It's wall-mounted, always plugged in, with the display always on and showing the Google Home app for whenever I need it. However, I have a couple of issues with this setup. One, the Google Home app would eventually burn in on the display. So I enabled the photo frame screensaver without choosing photos just to get a blank screen. The color screensaver isn't customizable to just black, and I don't want it to display bright colors at night when I sleep. Fine, it works. Number two, The Google Home app will close after a while, so even after tapping the screensaver away to get to the Home app, which should be open, I may have to reopen it anyways. This new Home Control screensaver should solve both issues and reduce the number of taps I need to perform. That's rad. I'm the guy this feature is for. P.S. I realize my A10 isn't going to get Android 15, at least not officially, but this is still a great addition for later down the road. Best regards, Andrew of Ontario.
Is there any better feeling than feeling like you're the person the feature is for?
You're the guy. Yeah, right? Totally. So this might not be for everybody, but it's definitely for me. And it's there's like, 10 it's like Google, others of us out there.
Google put together a wonderful little package just for you, Andrew of Ontario. Just for you.
And they call it the Andrew feature.
Yeah. So. Very cool. Nice. Well, thanks everybody for writing in. You can email us at contact@androidfaithful.com. We love to hear from you. Keep sending in those emails and keep sending in those bug droids. Love to get those graphics from y'all. So
indeed. And with that, we have reached the triumphant conclusion of this week's episode of Android Faithful. Thank you so much for watching and for listening. We love having you all along. Michelle, what do you want to leave people with?
If you want to see more of what's coming on Android 15, as you can see, I'm busy every week just diving into every update and finding out all the new stuff. And as I mentioned, I got a huge backlog of things to go through. If you want to see that work before it's published, you want to talk to me about Android 15 or anything else related to Android, you can join my Discord server, which is exclusive to Patreon subscribers. So go to patreon.com/RashalRahman and join the community to talk and nerd out and geek out about Android with a vibrant community of like-minded folks.
Very nice. That is patreon.com/RashalRahman. Thank you, Michelle. What about you, Wynn?
Hey, yeah, you know me. I'm an Android dev. I've been doing it for like 12 years now. You can find stuff I do on Android development at my website, randomlytyping.com. I did want to cheat a little bit and actually promote a YouTube channel that I've been kind of obsessing over this week because my Whoop broke and I've been trying out Garmin. I've been trying out different things. And I found this really great channel. If you are a fitness enthusiast and a wearable enthusiast and you want to know about like, if you want a scientific breakdown of like the different algorithms and like what like Polar and Garmin are doing, check out the channel, The Quantified Scientist. He actually does like very intense, like in-depth looks at everything and even discusses and compares the different algorithms that like Apple Watch is using and like, I don't know, Garmin and Huawei and Samsung are using. So anyway, like I just find it really fascinating because I'm going through a little bit of an upheaval in my fitness tracker life. So anyway, just wanted to promote a cool channel. Check it out, Quantified nice. Scientist, if you're into wearables and want a lot of information on it. So
cool.
Excellent pick.
Cool.
There it is.
And the fireworks come out in force. Thank you, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, on my side of the world, you can follow me on social media at RonXO. If you're looking for something else to listen to, head over to ifanboy.com. We released our monthly Media Splode, which is no relation to Techsploder, by the way. It's a nice little coincidence. Super coincidence. Podcast where we talk about TV and movies. And we actually talked about Dune 2 on this podcast. So if you are curious what I thought of Dune 2, spoiler, liked it, didn't. Love it or hate it, you can tune in to that over at iFanboy, as well as all the great podcasts that happen about comic books and stuff like that. So there you go.
I really enjoyed it, by the way. I expected to be bored, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Don't get me wrong. But basically, in a nutshell, I really, really liked it. It looks beautiful. It sounds beautiful. The amount of praise it was getting when it came out was just a joke. There were story issues with it. You know, there were a couple of, you know, it's hard to adapt the book of that size and magnitude.
Oh yeah.
So it wasn't perfect, but it was damn near close to perfect and it looked amazing. So
yeah, it really did. I'm happy 100%. I saw it in the theater. I didn't see the first one in the theater. Definitely. I'm happy I saw the second one in the theater.
Yeah.
As for me, as Ron said, no relation to Media Splode, which I never made that connection. Like I had Techsploder.
I'm pretty sure I told you a couple of times, but
yeah. it just didn't connect. I'm not sure why. I was so convinced that Techsploder was my thing that I just plugged my ears and went la la la. Anyways, at Techsploder on YouTube to subscribe to the channel. Also Techsploder.com. I do have a podcast website. If you just go to Techsploder.com, and you can subscribe to the podcast. First episode coming out in about a week and a half. Really looking forward to it. But that is it for this show, which is, as you know, Android Faithful. We do this show every Tuesday evening. And we do stream it live to the DTNS YouTube channel, as well as the DTNS, or sorry, what is it? It's a Good Day Internet Twitch channel as well. So if you want to watch us live, you can do that. But, you know, you should probably just subscribe to the podcast. I think that's the best thing that that we can recommend. Subscribe, because that's important. Also, if you want to support us via Patreon, you can. Patreon.com/AndroidFaithful is where you go to do that. And, you know, we're going to be here each and every week talking about all the crazy things happening in the world of Android, especially coming up. We've got Google I.O. coming up in a handful of weeks, a couple of weeks. We're all going to be there. And so we're going to have a blast. We're going to have a lot to talk about. So definitely stick around. We'll see you next time on Android Faith.
Bye, buddy.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.